Assuming then that God wills all men to be saved, and that as far as he is concerned, he gives to all the graces necessary for their salvation, we must say that all men have given to them the grace to enable them actually to pray, without needing a further grace, and by prayer, to obtain all further aid necessary for the observance of the commandments and for salvation. But it must be remarked that when we say, without needing a further grace, we do not mean that the common grace gives the power of prayer without the aid of assisting grace, since in order to exercise any act of piety besides the exciting grace, there is doubtless required the assisting or cooperating grace. But we mean that the common grace gives every man the power of actual prayer without a further preventing grace, which physically or morally determines the will of man to exercise the act of prayer. We will first mention the names of the famous theologians who teach this opinion as certain, and then we will prove it by authorities and arguments. It is held by Eisenbert, Cardinal Duperron, Alphonsus Lemoyne, and others, whom we shall presently quote, and at greater length as a set proposition by Honoratus Tarnley. All these authors prove that every man, by means of the ordinary sufficient grace alone, can actually pray without need of further aid, and by prayer can obtain all the graces requisite for the performance of the most difficult things. It was also held by Cardinal Norris, who proves the proposition that man, when the commandment urges, can pray if he will, and he proves it thus. It is clear that the power to pray should be proximate in the just man or the faithful. For if the faithful has only a remote power for a simple act of prayer, I am not here speaking of fervid prayer, he will not have another proximate power to obtain the grace of prayer, otherwise the series would be infinite. Assuming that in order to keep the commandments and to be saved, prayer is necessary, as we proved in the beginning when we spoke of the necessity of prayer, this learned author says well, that every one has the proximate power of prayer, in order that by prayer he may obtain the proximate power to do good, and therefore all can pray with only the ordinary grace without other assistance. Otherwise, if in order to obtain the proximate power for the act of prayer we required another power, we should still want another power of grace to obtain this power, and so on ad infinitum. And it would no longer be in the power of man to cooperate in his salvation. The same author, in another place, maintains this doctrine more clearly. Even in the state of fallen nature, the assistance sine qua, in other words, the sufficient grace, which is common to all, is given, though Jansenius denies it, and this assistance produces in us weak acts, namely prayer, not very fervent, for fulfilling the commandments. But for the actual observance of these, the assistance sine qua is only a remote help, by which we can, however, obtain by prayer the assistance quo, or efficacious grace, by which the commandments are fulfilled. So that Cardinal Norris held, it is certain that in the present state, all men have the assistance, in other words, ordinary grace, which without need of further assistance produces prayer, by which we can then obtain efficacious grace to enable us to observe the law. And hence we can easily understand the axiom, universally received in the schools, to him who does what in him lies, God does not refuse his grace. That is, to the man who prays and thus makes good use of the sufficient grace, which enables him to do such an easy thing as prayer, God does not refuse the efficacious grace to enable him to execute difficult things. Thus also, Lewis Thomason, who expresses astonishment at those who say that sufficient assistance is not enough to do any actual good work, nor to avoid any sin. For if, he says, this assistance is truly assistance and gives proximate power, how is it that, out of the innumerable quantity of men who are thus assisted, none keep the commandments? Or how is it truly sufficient if, besides it, efficacious grace is necessary? That man has not a sufficient power who wants a necessary assistance which is not in his own power. He means that sufficient grace, to be really sufficient, ought to give the man the proximate and ready power to execute a good act. But since, in order to perform such an act, another grace, namely efficacious grace, is wanted, unless a man has, at least mediately, this efficacious grace which is necessary for salvation, how can it be said that the sufficient grace gives this proximate and ready power? Since, says St. Thomas, God does not neglect to do that which is necessary to salvation. On the one hand, it is true that God is not bound to give us his grace, because what is gratis is not of obligation. But on the other hand, supposing that he gives us commandments, he is obliged to give us the assistance necessary for observing them. And as God obliges us actually to observe every precept whenever it applies, so ought he also actually to supply us, at least mediately or remotely, with the assistance necessary for the observance of the precept, without the necessity of a further grace, which is not common to all. Hence Thomason concludes that in order to reconcile the proposition that sufficient grace is enough for a man's salvation with the statement that efficacious grace is requisite to observe the whole law, it is necessary to say that sufficient grace is enough to pray and to perform similar easy acts, and that by means of these we can then obtain efficacious grace to fulfill the difficult acts. And this is without doubt in conformity with the doctrine of St. Augustine, who teaches, by the very fact that God is most firmly believed not to command impossibilities, we are admonished both what to do in easy things and in difficult things what to ask for. On this passage, Cardinal Norris observes, therefore we are able to do easy or less perfect works without asking God for further help, for which, however, we must pray in more difficult works. Thomason also brings forward the authority of St. Bonaventure, Scotus, and others in this subject, and says, all these considered the sufficient grace to be truly sufficient, whether the will consents to it or not. And this he demonstrates in four parts of his book, adducing the authorities of the schoolmen for a long series of years, beginning from the year 1100. Hebert, Bishop of Abrus and Doctor of the Sorbonne, who was the first to write against Jansenius, says, we think, first, that sufficient grace has only a contingent or immediate connection with the actual effect of the complete consent. We think further that sufficient grace is a grace that disposes for efficacious grace, since from a good use of it afterward God grants to the created will the grace that performs the complete effect. He had said before that all Catholic doctors of all schools have professed and do profess that a real inward grace is given, which is capable of persuading the will to consent to good, though on account of the free resistance of the will, it sometimes does not persuade it thus to consent. And for this doctrine, he quotes Gamaches, Duval, Eisenbert, Perez, Lemoyne, and others. Then he goes on, the assistance, therefore, of sufficient grace disposes us for the reception of efficacious grace, and is in some sort efficacious, namely of an incomplete effect, obtained first remotely, then more nearly, and at last proximately, such as is an act of faith, hope, love, and mixed with these, one of prayer. Hence the famous Alphonsus Lemoyne taught that this sufficient grace was the grace of asking or of prayer, of which St. Augustine so often speaks. So that according to Halbert, the difference between efficacious and sufficient grace is that the former produces its effect completely, while the latter produces it either contingently, in other words, sometimes but not always, or mediately, in other words, by means of prayer. Moreover, he says that sufficient grace, according to the good use we make of it, prepares us to obtain efficacious grace. Hence, he calls sufficient grace in some sort efficacious because of its effect commenced but not completed. Lastly, he says that sufficient grace is the grace of prayer, of which it is in our power to avail ourselves, as St. Augustine teaches, so that a man has no excuse if he does not do that which he already has sufficient grace to enable him to perform, by which grace, without further assistance, he may either act or at least obtain more help to enable him to act. And Hebert asserts that this was the common doctrine of the Sorbonne. Charles Duplessis d'Argenté, another theologian of the Sorbonne, quotes more than 1,000 theologians who teach directly that with sufficient grace, easy works are accomplished, and that a man who makes use of it obtains thereby a more abundant assistance for his thorough conversion. And precisely in this sense, as we said before, he says the celebrated axiom of the schools is to be understood: to those who do what is in their power, that is, by means of sufficient grace, God does not deny grace, that is, more abundant and efficacious grace. The learned Dionysius Batavius proves at great length that man works with simple, sufficient grace, and he even asserts that it would be monstrous to say otherwise, and that this is the doctrine not only of theologians but also of the Church. Hence he says that the grace of observing the precepts follows prayer, and that the gift of prayer is given by God at the time when he imposes the precept. This gift, by which God grants us power to do justly, follows the act of prayer, and this act is given contemporaneously with the law. So that as the law is imposed upon all, so the gift of prayer is given to all. The author of the Theology for the Use of the Seminary of Peterkow says that with sufficient grace alone, a man can do well, and sometimes does so, so that there is nothing to hinder that, of two persons furnished with the same assistance, one should very often perform the mere acts which precede full conversion, the other not. And this, he says, is in conformity with the doctrine of St. Augustine and St. Thomas, and of his first disciples, especially of Father Bartholomew Medina, who says sometimes a man is converted only with sufficient grace. And I find that also Father Louis of Granada asserts this to be the common doctrine of theologians. Theologians reckon two kinds of assistance, one sufficient, the other more than sufficient. By the former, of which men are sometimes converted, sometimes refuse to be converted. And shortly afterwards, and theologians define how universally this assistance is open to men. Hence, Petro Corinsis says, so man can do some acts of piety, such as to pray to God with humility with the sufficient grace only, and sometimes actually does them, and so prepares himself for further graces. This, he says, is the order of God's providence with regard to graces, that the succeeding should follow the good use of the former. And he concludes that thorough conversion and final perseverance are infallibly obtained by prayer, for which the sufficient grace, which is given to every one, abundantly suffices. The same is held by Cardinal Dieghieri, who in all things follows St. Augustine. Father Antonio Bucat of the Order of St. Francis of Paula defends the position that everyone is now able, without new assistance, to obtain by prayer the grace of conversion. And after quoting Gomachus, Duval, Hebert, Lemoyne, he cites in favor of this opinion Peter of Tarantasia, Bishop of Tully, Godard de Fonte, and Henry of Ghent, doctors of the Sorbonne, together with the Regius Professor Ligny, who in his tract De Gratia demonstrates that sufficient grace not only gives prayer, as Lemoyne and Professor Elias has said, but also gives the power to do some works that are not difficult. Gaudenzio Bontempi, in like manner, demonstrated that sufficient grace obtains efficacious grace by means of prayer, which is given to all who will avail themselves of it. Cardinal Robert Pullo asserts two kinds of grace, one always victorious, the other by which man sometimes works, sometimes does not, the other by the assistance of which man can do which he chooses of these two things, either to cooperate with grace or to despise it and to continue sinning. Father Fortunato de Brescia is also of the same opinion and holds that all men have the mediate grace of prayer to enable them to observe the precepts, and has no doubt that St. Augustine held the same. Richard of St. Victor similarly teaches that there is a sufficient grace which a man sometimes consents to, sometimes resists. Dominic Soto asks, why, of two persons whom God is most ready and desirous to convert, one is drawn by grace and not the other? And he answers, no other reason can be given except that one consents and cooperates while the other does not cooperate. Matthias Felicio, who wrote against Calvin, thus defines ordinary or sufficient grace. It is a divine motion or instinct which moves a man to good and is denied to none. Men behave differently to this instinct, for some acquiesce to it and are disposed de incongruo for habitual grace, for we believe that God will not desert those who do what they can. Others, on the contrary, oppose it. Andreas Vega likewise says, these helps which are given to all men are by most called inefficacious, because they do not always produce their effect, but are sometimes frustrated by sinners. Therefore, sufficient grace sometimes produces its effect and sometimes does not. Cardinal Gotti, in one place of his theology, apparently agrees with us, for where he discusses the difficulty, how a man can persevere if he will, when it is not in his power to have the special assistance which is requisite for perseverance, he answers that although this special assistance is not in a man's power, yet it is said to be in a man's power because he can, by the grace of God, ask for it and obtain it. And in this way it may be said to be in a man's power to have the assistance necessary for perseverance, because it can be obtained by prayers. So to verify the proposition that it is in man's power to persevere, it is necessary to grant both that he can, without needing any further grace, obtain by prayer the assistance requisite for perseverance, and also that with only the sufficient grace common to all, without need of any special grace, he can actually pray, and by prayer obtain perseverance. Otherwise, it could not be said that every man had the grace necessary for perseverance, at least remotely or mediately, by means of prayer. But if Cardinal Gotti did not mean this, at any rate, St. Francis de Sales did, when he said that the grace of actual prayer is given to everyone who will avail himself of it, and thence deduced that the perseverance is in the power of everybody. The saint said this clearly in his Theotimus, where, after proving that constant prayer is necessary to obtain from God the gift of final perseverance, he adds, now, since the gift of prayer is freely promised to all those who will consent to the heavenly inspirations, consequently, it is in our power to persevere. Cardinal Bellarmine teaches the same thing. An assistance then and there sufficient for salvation is given mediately or immediately to all men. We say mediately or immediately because to those who have the use of reason, we believe that holy inspirations are given by God, and that by this they have immediately the exciting grace by which, if they will acquiesce in it, they can be disposed to be justified, and at last to obtain salvation. Let us now proceed to examine the proofs of this doctrine. It is proved first from authority. We shall cite Scripture, the Council of Trent, and the Holy Fathers. First, Holy Scripture. We have first the authority of the Apostle, who assures us that God is faithful and will not permit us to be tempted beyond our strength, since he always gives us assistance, whether immediate or mediate, by means of prayer, to resist the assaults of our enemies. God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will make with the temptation issue that he may be able to bear it. Jansenius says that this text refers only to the predestinate, but this comment of his is completely unfounded. For St. Paul is writing to all the faithful of Corinth, all of whom he certainly did not consider to be predestinate. So that St. Thomas has good reason for understanding it generally of all men, and for saying that God would not be faithful if he did not grant us, so far as in him lies, those graces by means of which we can obtain salvation. But he would not appear to be faithful were he to refuse us, so far as he is concerned, those things which are requisite to enable us to come to him. It is proved, moreover, by all those texts in which God exhorts us to convert ourselves and to have recourse to him, to ask him for the graces necessary for our salvation, and promises to hear us when we have recourse to him. Wisdom preacheth aloud, saying, O children, how long will ye love childishness, and fools covet those things which are hurtful to themselves? Turn ye at my reproof. Behold, I will utter my spirit to you. Because I called, and you refused, I also will laugh in your destruction, and will mock at you. This exhortation, turn ye, would be simple mockery, says Bellarmine, if God did not give to sinners at least immediate grace of prayer for their conversion. Besides, we find in the passage mention made of the internal grace by which God calls sinners and gives them actual assistance for conversion, if they will accept it, in the words, Behold, I will bring forth my spirit to you. Come to me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will refresh you. Come and accuse me, saith the Lord, if your sins be as scarlet, they shall be made white as snow. Ask, and it shall be given you. And so in hundreds of other texts already quoted. Now if God did not give everyone grace actually to have recourse to him and actually to pray to him, all these invitations and exhortations, come all and I will refresh you, seek and it shall be given you, would be vain. Second, the Council of Trent. It is clearly proved by the passage of the Council of Trent so often quoted. I beg the reader to give this his best attention to this proof, which, if I am not mistaken, is perfectly decisive. There were innovators who said that as man was deprived of free will by the sin of Adam, the will of man at present does nothing in good actions, but is induced to receive them passively from God, without producing them himself. Hence, they inferred that the observance of the commandments was impossible to those who were not efficaciously moved and predetermined by grace to avoid evil and to do good. Against this error, the council pronounced sentence in words borrowed from St. Augustine. God does not command impossible things, but by commanding admonishes you both to do what you can and to pray for what you cannot do, and he helps you so that you may be able. The council then, in order to prove against the heretics that God's commandments are not impossible to anyone, has declared that all men have assistance to enable them to do good, or at least have the grace of prayer whereby to obtain greater assistance. The meaning of this is that every man can, by means of the common grace, do easy things, such as pray, without need of further extraordinary grace, and can by prayer obtain strength to do difficult things, according to the teachings of St. Augustine, already quoted. By the very fact that we most firmly believe that the good and just God could not have commanded impossible things, we are admonished in easy matters what to do, and in difficult matters what to pray for. So that, according to the council, the divine precepts are possible to all men, at least by means of prayer, by which greater help may be obtained to enable us to observe them. If therefore God has imposed his commands on all men, and has rendered their observance possible to all, at least mediately by means of prayer, we must necessarily conclude that all men have the grace to enable them to pray. Otherwise the commandments would not be possible to him who was without this grace. And as God grants to prayer actual grace to do good, and thereby renders all his commandments possible, so also he gives all actual grace to pray. Otherwise, if there were any man who had not actual grace to pray to him, the commandments would be impossible, as he could not even by means of prayer obtain the assistance necessary for their observance. This being settled, it is of no use to say that the words, "God admonishes you to do what you can and to ask for what you cannot do," are only to be understood of possible, not of actual prayer. Because, we reply, if the common and ordinary grace gave only possible and not actual prayer, the council would not have said, "He admonishes you to do what you can and to ask for what you cannot do," but "He admonishes you that you can do and that you can pray." Moreover, if the council had not intended to declare that everyone can observe the precepts or can pray to obtain grace to observe them, and had not meant to speak of actual grace, it would not have said, "He admonishes," because this word properly refers to actual operation and imports not the instruction of the mind, but the movement of the will to do that good which it can actually do. When therefore it said, "He admonishes you to do what you can and to ask for what you cannot do," it most clearly expressed not only possible operation and possible prayer, but actual operation and actual prayer. For if man had need of another extraordinary grace, which as yet he has not, in order actually to work or to pray, how could God admonish him to do or to ask that which he cannot actually either do or ask without efficacious grace? Father Fortunato Brescia speaks wisely on this point. If the actual grace of prayer were not given to all, but if for prayer we had need of efficacious grace, which is not common to all, prayer would be impossible to the great number who are without this efficacious grace, so that it could not be said with propriety that God admonishes you to ask for that which you cannot do, because he would then admonish us to do a thing requiring a grace which we did not possess. So that God's admonition to work and to pray must be understood of actual operation and prayer, without need of a further extraordinary grace. And this is exactly what St. Augustine means. Hence we are admonished in easy things what to do, and in difficult things what to pray for. Because he supposes that though all have not grace to enable them to do difficult things, all have at least grace to pray, prayer being an easy thing for everybody, as he also propounds in the words afterwards adopted by the Council of Trent, "God admonishes you to do what you can and to ask for what you cannot do." To recapitulate the argument, the Council says that God does not impose impossible commands, because he either gives assistance to observe them or gives the grace of prayer to obtain this assistance, which he always grants when it is prayed for. Now, if it could ever be true that God does not give all men grace, at least the mediate grace of prayer, actually to observe all these precepts, Jansenius' proposition would be true, that even the just man is without grace to enable him actually to observe some of the commandments. I do not know how else the next text of the Council of Trent can be understood and explained, unless the sufficient grace gave to all men the power of actually praying without the efficacious grace, which our opponents suppose to be necessary for the actual performance of any pious work. And supposing this necessity of a further grace for actual prayer, I cannot understand how this other text of the same council can be true, God does not leave those who have been once justified without grace unless they first leave Him. If I say the ordinary sufficient grace would not be enough for actual prayer, but if for this purpose efficacious grace, which is not common to all men, would be required, it would be true that when the just man would be tempted to commit his first mortal sin, and God would not give him efficacious grace at least to enable him to pray, and so to obtain strength to resist, then his succumbing to temptation might rather be said to result from the just man being abandoned by God before he had abandoned God, and from being left without the efficacious grace necessary to enable him to resist. Our opponents object to us a passage of St. Augustine where he appears to maintain that the grace of prayer is not granted to all men. Is not our prayer itself at times so tepid, or rather so cold and almost null, so null indeed, that we do not notice its nullity with any sorrow? For if this coldness is against our will, it does not prejudice our prayer. But Cardinal Sfondrati, replies, it is one thing to say that sinners do not pray, another to say that they have not grace to enable them to pray. St. Augustine does not say that any persons are without grace to pray as they ought, but only that at times our prayer is so cold as to be almost null, not for want of God's assistance to enable us to pray better, but simply through our fault, which renders our prayers null. Tornley answers in the same way, where he says of the first condemned proposition of Jansenius, the just do not always pray as they ought. It is their own fault that they do not pray so, since they have by sufficient grace strength to pray. St. Augustine says that our prayer is sometimes cold and almost null, but he does not say that we have not grace to enable us to pray more fervently. Moreover, Cardinal Norris observes in this same passage that by means of tepid prayer we can at least obtain grace to pray more fervently, and then by this we obtain efficacious grace to keep the commandments. I conclude that even tepid prayer is made with the assistance sine qua non and by the ordinary help of God, since they are weak acts. And yet by tepid prayer we obtain the spirit of more fervent prayer, which is given to us by the assistance quote. And he confirms this by the authority of St. Augustine, who writes thus, I have directed my prayers unto thee with a free and strong intention, for thou didst hear me when I prayed more weakly, and didst grant me strength for this. Nor did a valid objection be drawn from St. Augustine's observation on the text of St. Paul, the Spirit beseeches for us with groans not to be uttered, that it is the Holy Spirit that makes us intercede, and inspires us with the disposition to intercede, since the saint here simply says, against the Pelagians, that no one can pray without grace. And thus he himself explains it in his commentary, where he says, what thou dost by this gift, he is said to do, because without him thou couldst not do it. In the third place, our opinion is proved by the sayings of the Holy Fathers. St. Basil says, when, however, anyone is allowed to fall into temptation, it happens that he may be able to endure it, and to ask in prayer that the will of God may be done. The saint then says that when God permits a man to be tempted, he does it in order that the man may resist by asking for God's will, in other words, the grace to overcome. He therefore supposes that when a man has not sufficient assistance to overcome the temptation, he at least has the actual and common grace of prayer, by which he may obtain whatever further grace he needs. St. John Chrysostom says, he gave a law which might make their wounds manifest, in order that they might desire a physician. And again, nor can anyone be excused who by ceasing to pray has voluntarily abstained from overcoming his adversary. If such a man had not the grace necessary for actual prayer, whereby he might obtain grace to resist, he might excuse himself when he is overcome. So also Saint Bernard. Who are we, or what is our strength? This is what God wanted, that we, seeing our weakness, and that we have no other help, should with all humility have recourse to his mercy. God then has imposed on us a law impossible to our own strength, in order that we should go to him, and by prayer obtain strength to observe it. But if anyone were without the grace of actual prayer, to him the law would be utterly impossible. Many persons, says the same Saint Bernard, complain that they are deserted by grace, but grace could much more justly complain of being deserted by them. God has much more reason to complain of us for not corresponding to the grace he gives us than we have to complain of not having grace to which we may correspond. But no father is more clear on this point than Saint Augustine in several places. In one, he says, the Pelagians think themselves very knowing when they say God would not command that which he knows man could not do. Who is ignorant of this? But God does command some things that we cannot do, in order that we might know that for which we ought to ask him. Again, it is not reckoned your fault if you are ignorant without wishing to be so, but only if you neglect to inquire into that of which you are ignorant, nor that you do not cure your wounded members, but that you despise him who is willing to heal you. These are your own sins, for no man is deprived of the knowledge of how to seek with advantage. So that, according to Saint Augustine, no one is deprived of the grace of prayer, whereby he may obtain help for his conversion. Otherwise, if this grace were wanting, it could not be his fault if he were not converted. Again, what else then is shown us but that it is God who gives us power both to ask and to seek and to knock, who commands us to do these things? Again, once for all, receive this and understand it. Art thou not yet drawn? Pray that thou mayest be drawn. Again, that the soul then knows not what it ought to do comes from this, that it has not yet received it, but it will receive this also, if it has made a good use of what it has received, and it has received power to seek piously and diligently, if it will. Mark the words, it has received power to seek diligently and piously. Everyone then has the grace necessary for prayer, and if he makes a good use of this, he will receive grace to do that which before he was unable to do immediately. Again, let the man who is willing, but cannot do what he wills, pray that he may have such a measure as suffices for fulfilling the commandments, for he is so far assisted as to be able to do what is commanded. Again, free will is admonished by command to seek the gift of God, but it would be admonished without fruit to itself, unless it had first received some little love to induce it to seek such aid as would enable it to fulfill what was commanded. Mark the words, some little love. This means sufficient grace, whereby man is able to obtain by prayer actual grace to keep the commandments, whereby he is induced to seek such aid as would enable him to fulfill what was commanded. Again, he gives us commandments for this reason, that when we have tried to do what we are commanded, and are wearied through our infirmity, we may know how to ask the help of grace. Here the saint supposes that with ordinary grace we are not able to do difficult things, but can, by means of prayer, obtain the aid necessary to accomplish them. Hence he goes on to say, the law entered that sin might abound, when man do not implore the aid of God's grace, but when, by God's vocation, they understand to whom they must groan, and thereupon invoke him, the succeeding words will be fulfilled. Where sin abounded, grace superabounded. Here, as Petavius says, we see in express terms the want of abundant grace, and on the other hand, the presence of ordinary and common grace, which enables men to pray, and which Saint Augustine here calls God's vocation. In another place, he says, free will is left to man in this mortal life not to enable him to fulfill justice when he pleases, but to enable him to turn with pious supplications to him by whose gift he can fulfill it. When therefore Augustine says that man is unable to fulfill the whole law, and that prayer is the only means given him to obtain help to fulfill it, he certainly supposes that God gives every man the grace of actual prayer, without need of a further extraordinary aid, not common to all men. Otherwise, where this special aid was wanting, nothing would be left to the will to observe all the commandments, or at least the more difficult of them. And when the saint speaks thus, he certainly cannot mean that sufficient grace gives only the power, not the act of prayer. For so far as relates to power, it is certain that sufficient grace gives power for even the most difficult works. Hence the Holy Father evidently means, as he teaches elsewhere, that easy things such as prayer may well be actually accomplished by any man with the sufficient grace, and difficult things with the help which is obtained by means of prayer. But there are two texts of St. Augustine which are peculiarly to the point. The first is this: it is certain that we can keep the commandments if we will, but since the will is prepared by God, we must ask him that we may have such a will as is sufficient to enable us to perform what we will. Here he says that it is certain we could observe the law if we would. On the other hand, he says that in order to will to do so, and actually to do so, we must pray. Therefore, all men have grace given them to pray, and by prayer to obtain the abundant grace which makes us keep the commandments. Otherwise, if for actual prayer, efficacious grace, which is not common to all, were requisite, those to whom it was not given would not be able to keep the commandments, nor to have the will to keep them. The second text is that where the holy doctor answers the monks, who said that if grace was necessary, and if we can do nothing without it, why blame when we cannot work and have not grace to do so? You should rather pray God for us that he would give us this grace. St. Augustine answers, you must be blamed not because you do not work when you have not strength, but because you do not pray to obtain strength. He who will not be admonished and says, do you rather pray for me, must on that very account be admonished to do it, in other words, to pray for himself. Now if the saint had not believed that every man has grace to pray, if he will, without need of further aid, he never could have said that these people were to be blamed for not praying, for they could have answered that if they were not to be blamed for not working, when they had not special grace to enable them to work, in like manner they could not be blamed for not praying, when they had not special grace for actual prayer. This is what St. Augustine elsewhere says, let them not deceive themselves who say, why are we commanded to abstain from evil and do good, if it is God who works in us both to will and to do it? And he answers that when men do good, they should thank God for it, who gives them strength to do it, and when they do it not, they should pray to have the strength which they lack. But when they do it not, these are his words, let them pray that they may receive that which as yet they have not. Now if these people had not even the grace for the act of prayer, they might answer, why are we commanded to pray, if God does not work in us to make us pray? How are we to will to pray if we do not receive the grace necessary for actual prayer? Please go to tape number 5.